Good morning, and thank you for coming. And today I'm going to be talking about reducing zoonoses, controlling animal importation through federal and local collaboration. My co-author is Dr. Robert Kim Farley, who's over here, who is the director of the Communicable Disease Control and Prevention Division in our department. And to let you know, I have no relationships to disclose. The objectives of today's talk are to list 5 instances where imported animals pose a threat to the public or to animals, describe current federal and local animal importation oversight roles, describe findings of our animal importation surveys at the Los Angeles International Airport, or LAX, identify potential weaknesses to the current animal importation procedures, and discuss how the LAX Animal Importation Collaborative could serve as a model to address this issue. I'm not sure if all of you know about how many animals are coming through our borders and what a sieve it is, and how little oversight is occurring. Between 2000 and 2004, over 1 billion live animals were imported, and that amounts to 588,000 animals per day. These imported animals create some risks, zoonotic disease risks, foreign animal disease risks, and they can be carrying vectors which can transmit disease or cause problems. On top of the list of risks is rabies. In the United States, we've eliminated the canine rabies strain. However, there's the constant risk of importing canine rabies back into the United States. Repeatedly, there have been dogs and even cats that have been imported with rabies. For the two that came through the LAX airport, the puppy from Thailand and the cat from Mexico, both were symptomatic on entrance. However, they were still allowed in. And the puppy in Thailand had been seen by multiple veterinarians in Thailand, was sick on the plane, vomited into the owner's mouth on the plane, arrived, then was seen by 3 veterinarians, 2 in LA and 1 in Santa Barbara, before finally being diagnosed. Unfortunately, most vets have not seen canine or feline rabies. And so the fact this puppy was trying to bite people, they said, "Owner, please hold on to it. The next one, put a muzzle on it." The cat was throwing itself to the cage front. Even so, rabies wasn't even thought about until it went to the second veterinarian. There's a big problem with the wildlife trade and exotic pets. And everybody knows pretty much about the 2003 monkeypox outbreak. A single imported Gambian rat led to an outbreak that rat was in contact with prairie dogs, which in California, they're not legal, but in other states they are as pets. And those prairie dogs got infected. They then spread it to 47 people. We don't have monkeypox here. It caused a big concern. CDC outlawed the importation of rodents from this area of Africa. However, because there haven't been more cases, there's the possibility that they can be imported again. For some reason, people want these humongous rats. Now, also with animal importation, sometimes you get problems with owners. In Los Angeles County, this past year, we've had a problem with a dog importer. It was a lawyer who happened to be in Turkey and adopted a dog off the street. When the dog got here, it got diagnosed with leishmaniasis. Being a lawyer and not liking the county, he is refusing to allow us to see the animal and has threatened to sue the animal control agency. So the dog has disappeared through the cracks and we have no idea what happened to it. Foreign animal disease, another threat. In 2002, of all places, exotic Newcastle disease showed up in LA County, where I work. And it was detected in a backyard chicken in Compton, which is a very urban area, and it was a fighting cock. This outbreak appeared to be spread through the fighting of birds, and it started off in LA. A huge task force was brought in. The disease was not contained. It spread to 4 different states. 4.5 million birds had to be euthanized to control it, and hundreds of millions of dollars were spent to try to control it. Luckily, we eliminated it. It did appear to be the same strain as in Mexico, and there is a possibility of smuggling of birds back and forth into California for fighting purposes that brought it in. And through interviews of one of our veterinarians that was involved with the outbreak, it appeared that it may have been ongoing for up to a year prior to detection. And it happened to be a small animal practitioner that thought when he was handed a dead rooster to submit it to the state lab for testing. that brought this outbreak to light. Animals can also be vectors of disease, and in 2000, ticks on imported tortoises in Florida were found to be infected with a bacteria that can cause heartwater in cattle, which is potentially fatal and not present normally in the United States. And then also dogs have sporadically been importing screwworm infection. We've eliminated screwworm from North America through the release of sterile flies, and you know, millions and millions of dollars and years of effort have gotten rid of it, but animals are coming from these countries where it's still present. This happens to be a maggot that will feed on live tissue, and it could be a risk not only to animals, but to people who sleep outside, such as homeless people, that if the fly laid the eggs on them, that they would have these maggots just eating through them. Now, what are the federal and local animal importation roles? It's a big mess. For the federal agencies, they all have their different areas, and they don't talk to each other. There was a GAO report discussing the lack of communication and cooperation between the different agencies. They all have their special niche. CDC, you know, they're focused on public health. They look at dogs and cats, primarily for the rabies concern. Primates, because of the filoviruses, after the Ruston outbreak, that has been a big focus of theirs. And then they add other animals as public health threats come up, such as the Gambian rat and monkeypox outbreak. USDA Animal Care, they oversee the Animal Welfare Act, and that has to do with the transportation of animals and that the animals have food and water, their crates are appropriate. However, there are no USDA Animal Care officials at the LAX airport. There's one that covers Southern California and Arizona, and has to also permit variety of facilities such as places that are doing research. So they only show up at the airport maybe once a year. USDA APHIS, they oversee birds, livestock, and hoof stock because they're concerned about agricultural risks. US Fish and Wildlife Services, they oversee wildlife and fish, and actually fish are probably the most common type of animal that is brought into the United States for all those nice aquariums. Customs and Border Protection, they assist everybody. They're the good guys. You know, they back up all these other different agencies, and on weekends when nobody else is working or at night, they're there. Everybody else goes home, and they clear these different animal imports during the off hours, and they levy a tariff for those animals that are of commercial importance. Now, the locals, they don't really usually have much of a role. However, they do enforce the dog confinement agreements that are signed when a dog comes in without being properly vaccinated against rabies. This confinement agreement is issued by CDC. It's sent to the state public health veterinarian and then out to animal control agencies or local health departments for enforcement. However, enforcement of these agreements is spotty, and in Arizona, they do not enforce them at all. So, I'm a local agency. How did we get involved with animal importation and get so involved with it? And it's just a stepwise process that we just got pulled in. In 2008, we received a call. There was a dead dog at the airport. It had been imported from Korea. Well, we are the agency that does rabies testing for Los Angeles County. We transport them to our public health lab. Also, all infectious diseases in animals are reportable to the health department. We are unique in that way. And we have a law that says it's illegal to import infectious animal into Los Angeles County. So LA is just very different. But we grabbed this particular dog, submitted for rabies testing, it was negative. A week later, got another call. There's another dead puppy, same airline. Again, this was a shipment of over 10 dogs. We tested it. It was negative. When the third call arrived in a single month, I was getting a little suspicious and thinking there's something wrong here. And I asked our technician who had collected the animal, I'm looking at the paperwork, and I said, how old were these dogs? The paperwork says they were 5 months old. He said, they were very tiny. They were probably about 5 weeks old. The third one I said, bring in, and I want to take a picture of it. This is the picture. This one said it was 4 months old and had been vaccinated against rabies a month prior. Reviewing the paperwork, all of these puppies in this group all were under 8 weeks of age. They were held while we tested it, and it was negative. We went and talked to the airline. They said, oh, this is common. Whenever we're seeing large groups of puppies coming in, they're always very tiny, even though the paperwork says they're 4 or 5 months old, and they were vaccinated against rabies a whole year prior. So we started talking with the CDC, and we started watching this particular airline, and 3 more shipments came in with ill puppies that CDC and our agency quarantined at a local kennel, and we, you know, examined them. It turned out it was more hypoglycemia than anything because they were so small. And they all survived. However, through this process, it cost a lot of money. These puppies had hypoglycemia. They went to emergency clinics, and within a weekend, it was over $2,000 for the medical bills. The people who had imported said, we aren't going to pick them up. We got stuck with all these shipments of puppies, and we couldn't get them out of the kennel, and we didn't know what to do. And we're like, is this a big problem? You know, is this falsified thing going on? The airlines tell us it is. So we got together with CDC, Customs, and numerous animal control agencies, which were part of the Border Puppy Task Force, which had done surveys at the Mexico border a few times. And we said, we're going to do an animal importation survey at LAX. It's going to be 3 weeks. We're going to look at every single animal. We're going to see what is the situation with animal importation locally. We don't want all these sick puppies coming in, and what are they bringing? We did 2 follow-up surveys also, a year apart, because in between the surveys, CDC and our program, we were trying to educate importers and the airlines about the various laws and what they needed to do so that they wouldn't get in trouble with us. So here are our results. The first survey was in 2008, shortly after the multiple dead puppies, and it was over a 3-week period. We had 6 different animal control agencies sending volunteers to work with us, looked at over 6,000 animals. 183 dogs were also inspected. And we did find 39% of the imported dogs, their ages did not match up with their health certificates. They were saying that they were 4 or 5 months old. They had all been vaccinated a month prior, but we're looking at them, and they have no teeth. They're probably 6 weeks old. And as you might know, it's illegal to transport a puppy until they're 8 weeks of age. That is an Animal Welfare Act. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the USDA to send somebody to find these people. So we did an education effort. We came back a year later. CDC wanted to notify all the airlines about the survey. And surprise, surprise, a whole bunch of the airlines, especially those that we had caught before, all discontinued all animal shipments during our survey period and restarted it right afterwards. So we only found 10% with falsified health certificates. And I'm saying, okay, I really don't think that was the best way to do it. You don't tell people about it so they can tell all the importers that they're getting money from to stop shipment. So we come around, we're educating and everything, and CDC says, we've cured the problem. There is no more problem. I'm like, no. I do know there's a problem. We had a joint CDC public health associate, and part of his project was to do another survey. And I said, we will not pre-notify anybody. I don't want anybody to know. We're going to be stealthy, and we're going to do it right before Christmas, which is the biggest time for these importers to bring in the puppies to sell. These are being sold for about $2,000 a piece. There's a big business with importation of purebreds. So lo and behold, 40% had falsified paperwork. These were all in multiple dog shipments of 3 or more. We didn't find any of the problems with the singletons. Some other findings that we had, there were a lot of animal welfare violations. Besides the fact that the puppies were not 8 weeks of age, they had no food or water, and they had been in transit for up to 24 hours. The middle one was a crate that was used for a St. Bernard that unfortunately died. Crate size was not always sufficient. They would put 2 dogs in a single crate. Health and rabies certificates were not always accurate. After 3 years, we got it right. They're not accurate. You can't trust official health certificates, even with that stamp. Some of the dogs were not healthy. The bottom one was one of the dogs that we inspected, and it had a health certificate. It's fine. It has horrible lesions on it. It was skinny. It was malnourished. It had loads of fleas, so that the animal control officer called me late at night and says, the parasites are all exiting the crate, I'm afraid. We grabbed this dog and its companion and took it to a shelter and treated it for fleas and ticks before we released it to the importer. So we did see external parasites. There is no requirement for the animals to be treated for them. Then the other interesting thing was lab mice. I did not know that they weren't checked by anybody. They kind of fall out of the whole thing. And the lab mice are sealed up so you cannot see inside them. They are stamped, do not x-ray, or this will destroy our experiment. So one of my staff saw four boxes with mice. She hears skittering in three of them, and one has nothing. She sort of shakes it, nothing happens. We had to let that go because there is no federal oversight of these, and they're sealed. They can't be x-rayed. What the heck is in these boxes? I mean, that is kind of scary. The other thing is all the puppy shipments were listed as for personal use, and that continues today, even if there were 10, 20, 40 puppies coming in. They're all my personal pets. So the potential weaknesses that we identified is official paperwork, health certificates, rabies certificates from other countries are not reliable. We found that not all animals are inspected. CDC relied totally on the paperwork to clear them. They never looked at them until our first survey. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife, they use a sort of an evidence base to pick which ones they're going to go and look at. USDA pretty much checks all of the livestock because, you know, we're really concerned about foreign animal diseases. There is no requirement for animals to be treated for parasites, except for maybe the tortoises in Florida. And what do you do with problem shipments? That first situation in 2008 where the people abandoned all the animals, we were stuck with all these animals, that kennel said, we will no longer take any animals. So now we had a hole because now there is no place that was willing to take them. And at LA, we do not have a quarantine facility, which I believe New York does. And there are not enough federal staff to go and inspect all these animals, not with, you know, 588,000 animals coming in per day. So what did we do? You know, we had no money, but we had a concern. These animals are coming into Southern California. They're creating a risk for all of us in Southern California. We need to help the federal agencies. And so through this survey, we were able to get everybody enthused about working together. We used that survey data to support our effort and to identify the big problem, which was the health certificates, you just can't rely on them. And we were able to get a two-year CDC public health associate to work 1 year with us and 1 year with CDC, but it was a little more meshy than that. And Alberto, he was able to increase communication between our two programs and get all our policies and procedures set up. So that did sort of smooth the way because we are a local agency and now we are working under CDC at the airport. So now we assist the quarantine station on inspecting all incoming dogs and cats. And we are badged. We can go into the customs areas. We go through an official process. We didn't know it the first time when we crossed the line to go inspect animals. It was illegal. Now we're legal, and we're allowed to be there. Now, we also got the local animal control agency to provide a quarantine site. They're willing to take these problem shipments and deal with them. We also got local humane officers to be available for animal welfare issues so that since there's only one USDA animal welfare person for Southern California and Arizona, we need somebody local when we see something present at the airport. So SPCA has stepped up, and they're willing to actually follow some of these importers to see where they're selling the animals to. So we're hoping to do a sting at some point. Then we required all the cargo places to give us pre-notification. There's no law for it. We just said, thou shalt. And they have, you know, we do have to verify that it's working, but now they must notify CDC and our program simultaneously of all dog and cat imports. You know, we hope to expand it to other animals, but right now we're just focusing on the dogs because we are in the process of developing an animal importation working group, which will bring together all the federal agencies and local agencies that are involved with animal importation so that we can figure out how to collaborate more together, how we can streamline process, how locals can support the federal folks. And this is all being done with no funding, just within our regular scope of activities. That's why the pre-notification is so important. That's only been this past year, so then we can schedule it. And we don't hit every single shipment. We see how big the shipment is, where's the person going to, and is it one of our high-risk people? And then we say, ah, that's the person we're going to get. We have had a problem with people figured out. We work Monday through Friday. So they move their shipments to Saturday and Sunday. So now LA City Animal Services is going to get some of their animal control officers badged so they can hit the weekends. So people think they can hide from me? No. We track you down. So our model, you know, could be replicated elsewhere. It may not be a vet public health section, you know, being the lead. It could be an animal control agency. But locals can assist. Our staff went up to the San Francisco airport. They did a mini survey there. And now San Mateo County is looking at collaborating with San Francisco. So we went out there. We showed what we did. We explained everything. Now they're going to try to create a similar model there. And we're hoping this gets replicated. Or ultimately, animals only come into a few airports and that there's sufficient staffing to ensure that sick animals don't come in. We have to have quarantine stations at those sites. The Reference 7 is a new book that was put out by Dr. Fielding and Dr. Teutsch, and we have a chapter, Dr. Kim Farley and I, in it. And the book is Public Health Practice, What Works, and it was just released at this conference. And one of the chapters is about our model, and if you have any questions about it, you know, you certainly can give myself or Dr. Kim Farley a call at any time or send me an email. Thank you very much.